thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 247-7282.
And welcome to Let's Talk. Well, it's not Let's Talk Legal. This is the, it's Life and Taxes. I'm sorry, Andrew. You got so many different titles here. Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins with us.
We got Let's Talk Legal on Tuesday.
And you do the taxes. Okay. You're the tax man. That's important. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, buddy.
And here we are, January 2nd. It feels like a Monday, but it's a Thursday. Court's back in session. So, whoops. I'm sorry, folks. First day on the job, and I didn't have Andrew's mic on, so let me start over. Happy New Year, Andrew.
Happy New
and
Year,
and welcome to Coastal Daybreak with the new host, Mike McHugh. I'm learning, got the training wheels on. So anyway, here we are with Life and Taxes and Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins. So what do you have for us today, Andrew?
Well, Mike, you know, at the end of last year, we were talking about possible bills that were making their way through Congress. Congress passed a few things. Donald Trump signed a few things into law.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a couple of things we were talking about were the tax extenders. We mentioned that the PMI being allowed to take with your mortgage interest deduction, mm-hmm. that extender was passed. We mentioned about the medical expenses floor that was supposed to go up to 10% of your adjusted gross income to be able to deduct medical expenses. That was lowered back to 7.5% where it's historically has been. One of the things that we didn't mention that I wanted to bring to our listeners' attention, because we do talk about canceled indebtedness a lot on this
sure.
program, you know, because a lot of people, you know, think canceled indebtedness is an income, but it is. So if you get a loan forgiven, then you have canceled debt. And if you have canceled debt, you get a 1099-C. And that 1099-C has to be put into income unless you have an exception to the rule.
Okay.
And one of those that was just extended was the qualified principal residence indebtedness exception.
Wow.
So what that means, Mike, is that if you have a principal residence, and this is, again, is your same thing if you qualify for the exclusion of a gain on sale for selling your house.
Okay.
The rule is 2 out of 5 years for ownership and use of your house. That's how you decide whether this is a principal residence or not. If you have that situation and your house is foreclosed on, unfortunately, you go through some difficult times, you will be able to exclude up to $1 million of canceled debt relative to that foreclosure process. So we mentioned this multiple times, which is this is the we don't want to kick you when you're down kind of aspect of this law. And this came about during the housing crisis back in
08.
Yeah, back in 08.
Like 12 years ago.
And so they've just been extending it on and on and on and on. And so if you do end up in a situation where you have a foreclosure of your principal residence, then you can look towards this law when you get that 1099-C to exclude that canceled debt from income. And that was one more that did get passed during the extenders. One of the big things I wanted to talk about, you know, moving on is we had a huge tax law change that was passed. It's the Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act,
yep.
the SECURE Act.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben actually mentioned this in our last program of the year where he said, Andrew, I heard that, you know, they were going to move forward with this. And we had talked about it, you know, last June
mm-hmm.
where they had drafted this bill. But it really looked like it was kind of just going nowhere. And this is the biggest change to retirement accounts, you know, in about 15 years relative to tax laws. And one of the big things that we start with, Mike, is that the required minimum distribution age has increased.
Okay.
So currently, as of 12/31/19, the law was 70 and a half.
70 and a half years of age.
You have to start taking out required minimum distributions from your retirement accounts,
yeah.
IRAs, 401ks. That has been increased now to 72 years old.
Good.
So, you know, I think that the incentive here is that Congress recognized that individuals are, you know, working longer,
mm-hmm.
Life expectancy is increasing, individuals are working longer, and they wanted the ability for people not to have to take out that required minimum distribution, because if they're continuing to work and they have required minimum distribution required, guess what happens? Their taxable income is going to increase, and they're
right.
going to end up paying more taxes because they're at a higher rate.
Right.
You know, the idea behind these retirement accounts is you're supposed to be retired. And then when you do pull the money out, you're at a more favorable
lower tax bracket.
That's exactly. You're in a lower tax bracket. That's exactly right. The other thing is that since the required minimum distribution age increased, you have longer time to contribute to your IRA now. Mm-hmm. So if you are one of those individuals who find yourself working at 70 all the way up to 72, you can make contributions to your IRA just as you had before. So that's another good, good benefit, you know, for this.
You know, I always had issue with the government saying they would come out with a report saying Americans aren't saving enough. You know, nobody has any savings yet. Back in the day when I was, you know, working up in Washington and I was killing it in sales, I would max out my 401k sometime around April or May. It's like, why do you cap a limit on that, what I can put into it? And then it always bothered me that they had that 70.5. You know, it's, I guess that's the libertarian in me that, you know, just, you know, it's people's money. They've saved it, you know, but the government dictates. But that's a good thing for savers.
You know, and the idea is got to pay the piper at some point.
At some point, you can't. Yeah,
and that's the concept of, and that is a good segue because that leads us into inheritance of IRA accounts. And because this was a big change relative to required distributions for inherited IRAs. And so the rule here, most plans allowed for you to stretch out the required minimum distributions for an inherited IRA over the beneficiary's life expectancy.
Okay.
So this was a huge one. So, you know, in the event that, you know, let's just say you had a your father died and left you an inherited IRA and it had a $1 million in it, let's say, you can then take it out over your life expectancy, which could be 50 years potentially.
Yeah, rather than take it as one lump and get whacked with taxes. Right?
Exactly right. Yeah. And so that was a huge benefit for, you know, for individuals who had large retirement accounts who were leaving it to their children. They basically could just use their parents or another individual's retirement account almost as their own, because then they just keep allowing that to increase, build up value in the IRA, those investments, and only have to pull small amounts out, you know, over their life expectancy. The change has been made now, and I'll get into the exceptions, but the change, the general rule is now you must take out that entire amount within 10 years. So within 10 years of the decedent's death, the year of the decedent's death, you have to pull every last dollar out of that retirement account. No more looking at actuarial tables relative to what your life expectancy would be. It's just a 10-year rule now, Mike, where once the person dies, within 10 years, that account has to hit zero.
Is it pulled out and given to the heir as taxable income, or can it be moved into a tax-deferred account?
No, once you got the inherited IRA, you're going to have to
pay the piper.
Every amount that you pull out is going to be taxable. So, you know, it's important to understand that rule, because one of the big things is that within, if you don't pull that entire balance out within 10 years, you're penalized 50%.
Ouch.
Of the amount that you failed to withdraw in that account. So, you know, this is a big change. So we're on the 10-year clock, so to speak.
Wow.
And if you fail to take that action and make sure that you understand these rules, you're hit with a 50% penalty. So, again.
Of the remaining balance.
Of the remaining balance. That's correct. Out. That has not been taken out yet.
Woo.
So, you know, it's very important to understand this, these rules, because that's a big change.
It's huge.
Big change. Now, I will say that the exceptions, you know, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Spouses still can roll over into your IRA. So we've got that still intact. Minor children actually is an exception here, where we are going to allow the minor to reach age 18 or 21, and then they have 10 years from that point in time to pull the balance completely out. Or if you have a disabled individual who is, you're leaving your retirement account to, they're also going to be an exception to the rule, where they're not going to be bound by this pull every last dollar out within 10 years. So there'll be some interesting, you know, planning concepts, I think, relative to obviously these individuals who are exceptions to the rules.
Yeah, and to be cognizant of where you are, if you're in this situation, where you are in the disbursement plan, you know, how much is left from dad's, you know, dad's IRA.
That's right.
Can you take it out in unequal installments annually, or does it have to be?
So the rule right now actually says within 10 years you have to pull all the amount out.
Doesn't matter.
So really every year you can decide how much you want to pull out, you know, and the idea is that the more you leave, you're deferring it,
yep.
but you're going to get hit with a huge sum if you continue to leave the money in there. So the idea would be probably to spread that out the best you can, and take small amounts out maybe earlier, and then, you know, do leave maybe a little bit more to take later so you can defer a little bit of tax.
Very good. We had Lockwood's joining this conversation too.
I've been listening. Imagine I was going to call in.
Taxes.
But I have a quick question for you related to the Secure Act, and the issue of the delay to 72. What about Social Security? Because historically we've been able to keep Social Security until we were 70, and it was adding 8% per year. What's the deal?
Yeah, the question is that going to be on the table? Is that going to be a change that could get made? I don't know, you know, and this is brand new, Lockwood. You know, this is kind of they proposed it middle of last year. We didn't really think anything was going to happen. Next thing you know, we have a law. So then all of a sudden it's okay. Now we got this law. How does that affect the other aspects? And Social Security is certainly one of those.
Security. Okay.
So yeah.
I think there were other elements in that Secure Act that involved healthcare and individuals, sole proprietors that didn't belong to a healthcare plan.
Yeah.
They could join, like, for instance, like a chamber of commerce.
Correct.
If you had a correct, a common civil, civic
group. So one of the ideas here behind the Secure Act as well was to allow more access to 401k plans and allowing businesses to kind of pull themselves together through perhaps a chamber of commerce type setting to allow these retirement plans to be implemented. So that's another aspect of this, and we'll be parsing this one out for weeks and months to come, and I'll certainly be having many updates for our listeners.
Well, if you want to get in touch with Harvell and Collins, give Andrew a call at 252-762-9050. And it's afoster@harvellandcollins.com. That's his email, and their website is harvellandcollins.com. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for stopping in. That's good stuff.